It's time again for the Scotty Johnny podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam, talking Wisconsin sports, NFL through D3, college hockey, doesn't matter. Two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what do you bet on Twitter, with music by Delete Great Cars and Trucks. Here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome into the Scotty Johnny podcast. I am your not-so-humble host, Jonathan Barnett. And with me, as per usual, we have the illustrious Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam.
Hey, John, what's going on, man? Did you bring in a ringer stand-up comedian again this week?
No, we didn't get anybody else this week.
We're going to let the show from now on.
It'd be great. I'll just reach out to Jim Gaffigan. He responded to my daughter one time. Not in a creepy way, in a really sweet way. Like, my daughter Abby made a Thanksgiving Day type thing at school, and it was like, I am thankful for my family and Jim Gaffigan. Thanks for mommy and Ainsley and Josh and Jacob and Amelia and Daddy. And I was last. I was like, what? You don't even know Jim Gaffigan. So I took a picture of that and put it on Twitter, and he responded and retweeted it and said, well, this is clearly my target audience or something along those lines. And I had to show my daughter, it was like, Jim Gaffigan liked your drawing and your little sentences there. She was so excited. I got a video of her like freaking out about it. And I put that up too. I was like, my daughter responded to Jim Gaffigan. Thank you for making her day. And he responded to me again. Fantastic. I think off air we had talked with Eric Helwig last week, who's a fantastic guest, and we'll definitely try to have him on again. He talked about he had opened for Jim Gaffigan once or twice, I think we said, when he was in New York, trying out new routines. So that was interesting to hear too. But
absolutely. Yeah. No, that was an interesting dude, man. He was good. And I got his podcast queued up for this week to listen to that. So
it's a really fun idea for a podcast. I like that.
And he's 100% spot on. He talks about backup quarterbacks for about 6 minutes and then 40 minutes of everything else. So yes.
Who hasn't downloaded
our podcast works from time to time. We talk about Wisconsin sports for 5 minutes and then just go on and on about other stuff.
Do you remember that guy from 1987? What was his name? Yeah. No, if you haven't listened to his podcast yet, he has some great ones of like letters from the bench, and they do like the old timey, you know, violin music, like he's writing from the Civil War, but it's like, was it Bill Vlasic or whatever like that, the backup quarterback for the Chargers for like in the 70s, is writing a thing about pickles, of course. It's pretty fantastic. Anyhow, thank you again, everybody, for joining us this week. This is pretty fantastic week. The sports can stand by themselves. We don't need to bring in ringers to make us sound funnier.
Fair point.
Right. I can just tell my bad jokes and move on from them on my own without being told that they're bad. But, I mean, like, the first thing is, like, we have good stories this week. It's fantastic. We're so happy to have everyone back with us this week. All of our wonderful foreign listeners here, and by foreign, I just mean that you're not foreign where you are, but you're foreign to us. But we appreciate
Hello,
you.
Hello, Belarus.
Yeah, we appreciate you so much. And just remember, of course, you can follow the podcast here. It's on Twitter at ScottyJohnnyPod. You can also follow me at NotSoHumbleHost. And I kind of gave away your nickname right away off the top here, Aaron. But what's your moniker? What's your handle?
My moniker is at Cheddar Talk, John, at Cheddar Talk. That's where you can find me on the old Twitter machine. I'm trying to figure out if I've done anything really of significance this last week. Bears fans were pretty quiet after the game, so.
No, they were celebrating. They're breaking out the champagne for their playoff berth, and their 8-8 playoff berth. But anyhow, I'll say, please remember that wherever it is you are listening to us, subscribe, download, listen, rate, and review us. We'll get into Aaron's Twitter feed and his Twitter beefs and whatever else as we start moving right on into our main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
All right, Aaron, fantastic time for a main event. Today we have Packer victory, 13-3. This is clearly the most overrated back-to-back 13-3 team in NFL history.
Obviously.
The Bears are statistically 100% the most overrated seventh seed in NFC history. There's no disputing that. I don't think anybody could fight me on that.
Because they're the only seventh seed in NFL NFC history. Yeah.
And so I'm not sure exactly the seventh seed in the AFC, and I don't care. But the biggest thing is that the Bears are the first team to sneak in with that seventh seed. They're not the first third wild card, but they are the first seventh seed since they changed the playoffs to have four divisions. So
I wouldn't mind seeing them knock off the Saints. I guess we'd have to play them then in the second round, which...
Yeah, that would be fine. I'm still not worried about that team. We doubled them up again, basically. This is like the second time.
Right. Hey, John, I'm going to say this. I got to get that because I looked it up while you were talking. So, fabulous. Of course, Chiefs, in the AFC, Chiefs, Bills, Steelers, who ended the season 1-4, by the way.
Okay.
Oh, is that me making noise?
Yeah, that's your phone, man.
Oh, thank you, PFF, for running an ad in the background. Anyways, so the Colts were the seventh seed in the AFC at 11-5.
There we go. Okay.
And so the Dolphins were 10-6 and didn't make the playoffs. Meanwhile, in the NFC, we have an NFC East team that is 7-9. Dang near had a 6-10 team. And the Bears sneaking in at 8-8. Now, granted, the AFC also had the Jets and the Jags having Tank for Tua 2.0.
Or Trevor or Luke, Trey, whichever
Luke,
one you want.
Luke for Lawrence. Is that what we went with for?
I think it was Tank anyway. For Trevor.
Tank for Trevor? I like Luke for Lawrence anyways.
Yeah, that sounds fine.
Tank for Tua was better. But anyways.
Minnesota was talking about Tank for Trey. So they can get Trey Lance, the god of North Dakota State.
PA
anyway, has been saying that.
So, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, because he's one of us. He's one of us guy. You know, like, yeah, he's from the Dakotas. He's basically Minnesota. So, you know, he'll play better for us because he's from here. Like,
let's go
like
get Felix. The kid from Fargo.
Fargo. Yeah. Right. Fargo's pert near Minnesota, you know. It's just on the other side of the river. And they'd better have been smarter if they would have built on our side because it always floods to the North Dakota side. Anyways, where was I going with that one?
So
those inflated records in the AFC are a lot because there was a couple of really bad teams in the AFC.
But at the same time,
the worst record in the AFC to make the playoffs is 11-5. And the Bears have the white lights on backing up into the playoffs. Yeah.
Yeah. So, great win, 35-16. I said it before the game. I was saying it on Twitter. If you're following me, Aaron and I grew up watching that 85s Bears team, and there is no amount of victory, there is no amount of rubbing it in their face that will ever be enough to make up for everything that 1980s, not just the 85 team, but the teams of the 80s did to teams of the NFL for being a one Super Bowl dynasty that they were. The Bears loved running up the score. They gave a touchdown, a goal line run to Refrigerator Perry in the Super Bowl and not Walter Payton. That describes for you what the Ditka Bears were all about, which is trying to embarrass you with a 300 and I don't know what he was. He was 450. He was huge. He was spherical. He was Sputnik, spherical yet pointy in places.
He had things circling around him.
Yeah. Yes. It's his own gravitational pull. Everything is a gravitational pull, but anyhow.
The only likable person on that entire Bears team they didn't give the handoff to.
Right. Singletary's nice. I mean, he's a nice guy. He's crazy good, but yeah, he was also, yeah. But yeah. I mean, like, just the idea that they didn't give it to one of their all-time greats and instead decided to try to embarrass other teams. That's what they were. And I hated everything about them. So, yeah, there's no amount of rubbing in the Bears' faces that'll ever be enough for me. But 35-16 felt good. It felt good. There were some tense moments in there. Packers got up big, scored the first several times they had the ball. Rodgers was doing very well.
Scored the first three times they had the ball.
Yeah, first three times. The third quarter, I think Rodgers threw a total of five passes, if I'm correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tavon Austin, you know, thank God we went out and got him. I don't know. Fumbles a punt, which was
the one punt, but I mean,
he caught a pass too, which was like an 8 yard gain on a second or first and 15 or something like that too. They did a good job of getting him side to side. He's not going to be a real deep threat type guy. He's not a really good receiver. He's an interesting fast guy, and if you can find a way to get him involved, which they found a couple ways to do that. But man, yeah, you can't fumble that ball there. The biggest thing here is when the Packers got the ball back after the Bears had to go for it on fourth down three times in one drive. I believe it was three times the one drive. They had completed four in a row, two of them on that drive. The fifth time they went for it on fourth down, they failed. And Packers got the ball, went straight down the field, and scored. And that basically ended the game. And the thing is then the Bears, you knew, had to press. I know that our good buddy Happy Mitch has been trying to dispel the belief that, like, hey, throwing shallow in that doesn't mean he's not great. It does mean literally the Bears were scared to put the ball in his hands. Like, they know he's limited. You can win with that. He's limited. He's not terrible. He was very good on five-yard passes. Little hitches, the play action route to the tight end, flaring off on the side. Those were open and they did a good job.
He had one good long pass, and that was to Mooney.
Mooney's
I
nice.
Don't even remember what that. He had one good, and Mooney made that play happen because it was woefully underthrown.
Yeah.
I mean, so.
But he was very open. So yeah, I get that. Mm-hmm. That was a very good play on his part. Mitchell Trubisky didn't play terribly. He played within himself. He did what they were asking him to do, which was, by the way, as smart a game plan as the Bears could have had, I think. Sure. Because the Bears, they know that the only way they're going to win is if David Montgomery is going to be successful, which he wasn't. And if Mitchell Trubisky can get running off those edges, use the play action to find some short passes, hit those short passes and just be successful and get you, you know, 4 and 5 yards every play. And he had an average of 6 yards, I believe, per pass. He had 252 yards on 42 passes. 42 passes is too many.
Right.
David Montgomery also...
For that many yards, like, yeah. If you have 450 yards, sure, yeah.
Yeah. David Montgomery was just... He was nothing in the... I mean, like, he was the biggest part of their game, I think. He had 9 catches. He was involved. He had 9 targets, 9 catches. 7 yards a catch. So when they got him involved, and normally he gets like 2 catches a game. They have not involved him a lot in the passing game. They used him a lot more here. Mooney was 11 catches for 93 yards. I mean, that means he had 10 catches for 40 yards. And Allen Robinson targeted 5 times for 2 catches, 37 yards.
That's what happens when you have Jair Alexander covering you too, by the way. And I think his 2 catches were when he was off Jair.
Yeah, I believe. I mean, and he didn't go anywhere afterwards. This whole week, I've had Bears fans trying to fight me on this, for saying, like, look, David Montgomery's elite. I was like, he's not elite. He's not top 7. He's not top 10. He's nice. He's not bad. Like, people assume that if you say somebody's not elite, you think they suck. I don't think he sucks. He's a nice running back. He wouldn't start for the Packers. He wouldn't start for the Vikings. He's maybe the third best running back in the division. And... you know, he would really have to fight Jamal, because Jamal Williams is a very good pass catcher and a very good blocker.
Pass blocker.
Yeah. And also runs very well in the same style that Montgomery does. He can get up and down and get at, you know, like, fight for that extra yard or two. And the only thing that Bears fans ever came back to me with was, well, David Montgomery breaks a lot of tackles. He didn't break tackles in this game. The first guy got him down, and if he didn't, the second guy was there while the first guy was still holding on. He only had one play where I saw him just break through a guy and then make a play. I mean, it was still only like a 5-yard run, but I mean, he didn't look shifty. He didn't look elusive. He didn't look powerful. He looked good. He looked good. And that O-line is kind of an average O-line that they've got.
All right.
Based on a lot of the metrics that they have out there, they're like getting to the second level metrics puts them somewhere around 15th. Their metrics in terms of whether or not they can get through the first line of blockers is something like 9th. You know, the yards before contact is something like 9th. I mean, they're like a 15 to 20 type offensive line. Well, 12 to 20 offensive line in terms of a lot of the metrics that they have out there. So, I mean, Montgomery's nice, and, you know, that's about it. Mooney was great. He is a great pickup. I would have loved to have seen him go to the Packers. Kmet is going to be something special in this league. I really think he's good. They got some young guys who are going to be something. And, you know, I hope they pay Mitchell Trubisky all the money that they have left.
I hope they make it the highest paid, longest term contract in NFL history.
If they just like pay him 25.
Way more than Mahomes. So, hey, so enough of this Bears talk. I want to make a critique sandwich with happy bread for you about our Packers, because you're bringing up the line and you're bringing up receivers. I forget if it was Eli Berkovitz, super fan Eli Berkovitz, or whoever it was on Twitter today, was doing a breakdown of the MVS touchdown pass, the long one, where they walked up to the line and Aaron Rodgers just stood back there in an empty set, and the Bears were walking around, and he's like, literally, you can hear Aaron Rodgers like diagnose the play. He puts Jamal Williams out to the far left, and like with 2 seconds left just before the play clock goes off, he signals to Jamal Williams to just stay still, because Rodgers sees that Danny Trevathan, the dirtiest player in football, now that whatever his name, what's his name, still play for the Cincinnati or not?
No, Burfict's out. He went to Burfict's Oakland up before he was done too.
Okay, so Danny Trevathan, dirtiest player in football, is lined up, and so basically the way it worked out was Aaron Rodgers, being the assassin he is, like just watching the field, just didn't move, didn't put anybody in motion. Last second tells Jamal Williams not to move, because if he puts him in a hot route and to come inside, then they can cover down on him. Instead, he knows that he's not looking at MVS, and he knows Danny Trevathan is sweating, hoping to God that Aaron Rodgers doesn't notice that he's trying to cover him. Yeah. And then the corner to the side that Jamal Williams is on, the inside corner, is blitzing. He knows it, but he's got to cover 20 yards to get to Aaron Rodgers. Well, that's enough time for MVS to get behind him.
Get the ball with some air, yeah.
Yeah, and just put it on in perfect. It was great. It was an amazing touchdown. Okay, so that's the first. That's the first piece of positive bread.
Let me just say this. I mean, that's Pagano pulling a Pettin, and that's a lot of alliteration there. But that was fantastic. It was great.
That's a triple P. If you go to your Urban Dictionary, there's a different definition of triple P, but we won't bring that up.
Kids don't go to that site.
So that's my first piece of positive bread on this critique sandwich. The second one was, so Aaron Rodgers is 11 for 11, perfect passing with 3 touchdowns. He gets MVS deep again.
Yeah.
Puts it on him. MVS catches that ball. He's 12 for 12 with 4 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Coming out of the half.
Yeah.
The Bears would have went to sleep. Like, it would have been, well, here we are again. It would have been 20-10. MVS would have had 2 touchdowns over 60 yards, which he has – had it end up having seven plays over 40 yards this year with that first touchdown catch, but he dropped it, like flat out dropped it. Like he had no, like the guy was a stride and a half behind him, and MVS can't be doing, I mean, he's got to get over this. He has to, or you just have to move on.
Just take him back to like high school type things. He's like, catch with your thumbs together. Just the ball's up there. There's nobody, like you got him beat. You got the guy beat. He had him beat. He was a good 2 yards clear of the other guy. And he does this thing where, like, you know, if you look at your hands, catch with your pinkies together. What's the weakest finger you have on your hand? Mm-hmm. You know, like, catch with your thumbs together. Like, get, that's when they say high pointing the ball. You want to get the ball up there. And, I mean, I guess the difference
have to high point that one, because
the ball is behind.
He could have basketed that one in. But, I mean,
yeah,
either way, even fall down with it and don't get the touchdown. But for God's sake, man, you got to catch that ball.
Slow even up and make sure you get
even
it.
Even if you don't get into the end zone, you have to drop and, like, make sure you catch it. Whatever. You got a 60-yard completion. You're right down there. I mean, that would have been an early third quarter dagger. But instead... The game stalled. They ended up punting. The game stalled out. Oh, by the way, so here's the okay. So that's the critique. I'm going to put a positive slice of cheese on before I get to the second piece of bread, and that is, Aaron Rodgers did end up with more touchdown passes than J.K. Scott ended up with punts.
Yep, 48-46.
I know. And fantastic. It was after when MBS dropped that ball, I was like, come on, man. This is not good for the – has that happened before? Maybe when Manning or Brady went for over 44. When Brady had that 50-touchdown season, he might have outdone his punter. But, yeah, man, probably. That's going to be hard to do.
Yeah, because his 50-touchdown season, too, they were such jerks that year. They went for it all the time. Yeah. They were trying to bury – that was the year where they were up by, like, 4 touchdowns, gave up a touchdown to make it a 3-touchdown game in the fourth, and put Brady back in the game? Like, come on. They were playing to try to embarrass people, and that's – and, you know, maybe that's some football karma for this season. I don't know. But either way.
Yeah. Anyhow. Yeah. So the second piece of positive bread on this critique sandwich is the offensive line of the Green Bay Packers.
Well,
we all found out on Bakhtiari on what was that Thursday? Happy New Year's. Non-padded freak injury at practice tears his ACL, and so we had to play without Bakhtiari for 3 games earlier this season, which doesn't make life easier in any way. LaFleur even said that because during the pregame with Wayne Larrabee, Wayne's like, so not having him for 3 games earlier this year, that makes it easier. And LaFleur goes, doesn't make it easier, but, you know, it makes it a little bit more manageable. You know, losing the best left tackle in football on a non-play injury is hard to swallow. But I even put it out there. I said, if there's a team that will be able to cover down on losing Bakhtiari for the long run for a Super Bowl push, it's the Green Bay Packers. For whatever reason, the Green Bay Packers do offensive line very well. And Billy Turner did not disappoint this week at all. As a matter of fact, the only sack he gave up was that one that Khalil Mack got when Rodgers was getting out of the pocket. And it really wasn't – Billy Turner did his job. It's just the play ran too long and Khalil Mack got free and – Billy Turner played great, and you know everyone was like, "Well, Bakhtiari, you can just leave him out there by himself, and you don't have to help him." I didn't see Billy Turner needing a whole lot of help.
Nope, and yeah, that one it was actually a chase down from the backside because Rodgers stepped back up in the pocket and then stepped off to his right, and so that what the big problem is that Akeem Hicks got pushed up the middle. So he didn't have a whole lot of space to step up into, so he had to step up and then quickly move off to the right, which created a bad angle for Turner, who was already trying to step back and try to push him beyond. And Khalil Mack's a fantastic pass rusher. He's the best pass rusher in the NFC North. He is. And I know that Za'Darius Smith has better numbers. You'd take Khalil Mack.
We talked about this 4 weeks ago when they played the Bears last time.
It's kind of like Brady compared to Rodgers. Rodgers is the better quarterback. Brady has the accomplishments. The thing is, Khalil Mack's the better player, and Za'Darius has had the accomplishments over the last 2 years. He's had the more sacks and all that other stuff. I'd still take Khalil Mack's career over Za'Darius.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, because I remember when because Billy Turner came from the Broncos, right? That's where he came from?
Yep.
And it was kind of one of those, is this guy, you know, it was a very depth move at the time. That's turning out to be probably one of Gutekunst's better signings since he's been here because just of the depth it gave us at in the line. And as long as Wagner stays healthy on the right side, I mean, we've still got Runyon Jr. So what?
Uh-oh. I'm knocking on wood when you say that.
Oh, no. I know it. I know what I'm saying because Wagner's got a bum knee. So, I mean, it's.
So, I mean, like, that's the thing is, like, picking up Wagner has been good because Wagner out there, former Outland Trophy candidate, Wagner out there has been solid at least. Not fantastic, but solid. We've been able to have great tackle play because Elgton Jenkins is fantastic. He can move to center if he needs to. Lindsley should have been a Pro Bowler except for he got hurt for about a month there. Mm-hmm. We have one of the best centers, one of the better guards, and the best left tackle. We now lost the best left tackle, but we still have, you know, Lucas able to step in there. If we need to, we could have put, like, we have so many options. We could have put Elgton Jenkins at left tackle and left Turner where he is and then bring Runyon in at the left guard. We could have done that. But what we did is we kicked Turner out to tackle. We leave Elton Jenkins where he is, where he's mauling people. We put Lucas in at right guard. Leave Wagner at right tackle and leave Lindsay where he is.
Lucas is really good too. Like I'm not going to poo-poo Lucas. Lucas does a very good job, but as long as you got Jenkins and Lindsay where they're most comfortable,
yeah,
they can do the most damage. And if the other guys just hold their own, well, then let the two guys be comfortable where they're at, and they can do way more damage. And if you think for a second that not having Elton Jenkins right next to Billy Turner didn't help, like, I'm not saying Billy Turner, like, he went out and had to help Billy Turner, but you have to respect Elton Jenkins. Like, you can't just let him run free on the offensive line. You got to put somebody over top of him, which gives the other three linemen two guys to deal with, you know, on the right hand side.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just, like, there are so many options on this team to have Runyon and Lucas available to you in times like this. Is invaluable. The way that they evaluate, whatever the measurables they use to try to evaluate their linemen, has been lights out. I mean, it's just congratulations to both Ted Thompson and to Gutekunst for being able to put together teams like this with the offensive line that they've been able to put together over the last couple of years. I know that we didn't hear a lot about Akeem Hicks. He did fairly well. I mean, he wasn't bad. But he was talking about before the game, they were talking about they interview a lot of people. He wasn't there the first time the Packers played him. The Packers just ran all over the Bears, too. Didn't get a ton of running yards, but we didn't have a lot of carries. 19 total carries for the Packers, and that includes one rush by Rodgers for 4 yards. Packers got 4.2 a carry against this Bears defense. So Akeem Hicks he wanted to come in and just shut down the run game. Well, the run game was working fine. Just, you know, Aaron Rodgers had a 147.9 rating. 147, there's no and. I apologize.
Yeah, Larry said it before the game, too, because they're asking about, you know, they're talking about the splitting up the run between the three running backs and who's going to be on the field the most. And they were actually even talking about, like, Jamal Williams, maybe, because, you know, with Dylan and Jones being the more productive backs, you know, who's going to get affected the most by the carries, and it's Williams. And it was like, but McCarron brought up, he goes, or Williams is going to see more time on the field than either back because their two top cornerbacks are down and he's the best pass blocker. And with Bakhtiari out, maybe Williams is going to be out there pass blocking in the backfield and just let Rodgers carve up the secondary, which is what ended up happening.
Yeah. He cut
the. I mean, I don't know if Williams was on the field more often than not. I did see a couple packages where Dylan and Jones were on the field together, but I don't know if Williams was out there pass blocking a whole lot or not. But like we just said, I don't think Turner really needed a whole lot of help out there at left tackle. So,
yeah, no. And Williams he out touched Dylan. He had 5 carries. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to see. He also had. Did he get any
one touches? Really good run at the end too?
Yeah, where he just kind of put him down and just kind of drove through some guys there, so that worked.
Hit the line, dead ended, and then bounced it out to the right, and yeah.
Yeah,
did a very good job. Like a sledgehammer, man.
He gets the yards that are there, and sometimes more than there are there. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to look at snap counts for them here and see what they did. Dylan had 5 total snap counts. I'm sorry. 5 total snaps to Jamal Williams, 12 to Jones, 32.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, Jamal Williams was in on 26% of the plays, it looks like.
I did notice, too, Jones had that one really nice run towards the end, not the touchdown even, but just before that. He does have Alvin Kamara quality to him where he will stop, like, in the middle of the field and, like, he did that on that super long run a couple weeks back too, that 70 yarder. Like, he'll stop in the field and let the blocks form in front of him and then start back up. Kamara does that cool thing where he, like, stops, like, in the corner of the end zone. Like, he runs across the goal line and just stops, like, a foot into the end zone. Like, which means you've just got amazing foot control, you know, like, you're just, your body control is amazing. Like, Aaron Jones, I was watching that on one other run. It was only like an 8-yard run, and it was for a first down or for a long first down run or whatever. I forget exactly what it was, but like it's fun to watch. Like, he will stop like just like 5 yards downfield and let everything move in front of him and then take off again. And it's
Yeah.
He's a, I hope to God the Packers could somehow manage to keep him around for, I don't know.
I don't know how it works. The, I mean, the money is just going crazy. Either. But so here's a couple kind of unsung heroes from this season that I think are just been fantastic at this point and have really helped. Darnell Savage has improved so much from week one to now.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
He had a ton of tackles. He had 8 solo tackles in this game. Christian Kirksey had a couple nice plays, including a sack, his second sack in 2 weeks. I was like, I'm so glad to see inside backers involved in the blitz packages because they should be involved more. And actually, LaFleur kind of alluded to that a little bit here. He said, yeah, we'd like to press more on third and fourth down, considering the fact that we're playing, you know, 6 yards off on a third and three and just giving them the first down on third and short. Right. So I don't know why we do that, but clearly the head coach is also aware of it and also right. concerned about it. One of the other great people that needs to be talked about.
Think about the improved play with Darnell Savage. Our defensive backs are Jair Alexander, Kevin King, Darnell Savage, and Adrian Amos. And
Amos played great again. But yeah, and even behind that's
our starting four.
Yeah, and I don't think Kevin King's long for this team, unfortunately, when his contract's up, because Chandon Sullivan and Josh Jackson right behind them in that group there, too. So I don't know how much, I mean, if you're looking in terms of the money. Yeah.
After years of blown draft picks on secondary players.
They have some depth.
And we let Micah Hyde go.
Yeah, he's not the only one.
And who's the guy who's out in San Diego now?
Hayward, yeah. But the other guy, too, Chris Barnes has been a fantastic find for this team at inside linebacker and has been just a solid, steady player on this team. He led the team in tackles again this game, 8 solo, 14 total, including a tackle for loss. I haven't seen him doing a lot in the pass game, but he's just been able to be available and around the ball a lot, including at the line of scrimmage. At and around the line of scrimmage, which is, by the way, not what Blake Martinez did.
I was just going to say he's like a fast Blake Martinez.
So, yeah. Rashawn Gary also been getting better.
Blake Martinez is one of those Giants players barking on Twitter last night about how the Eagles were.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to roll on that in last take.
Yeah, today. I know.
We're definitely going to roll on
that. You said Blake, though, and I was like, I saw his name pop up as one of the Giants complaining about not making the playoffs because of the Eagles. And I was just like, man, just stop.
All right. Sorry. And, you know, I mean, it gets old saying this, but I mean, like, seriously, 2 tight ends from Indiana State scored touchdowns this week for the Packers. Wow. I mean, that is a powerhouse football program. Indiana State, go Sycamores. I mean, they are in a murderer's row of a conference because they share a conference with North Dakota
State. It's where Larry Bird came from, you know.
It is.
Tough guy country. Tough guy country.
They're in the Missouri Valley with North Dakota State and North Dakota, Northern Iowa, and Illinois State, Redbirds and all that. And Youngstown, for whatever reason, just for fun. But anyhow, that's Packer Talk. Big thing is we don't know who we're playing next week because we're not playing next week, I guess. Who we're playing in 2 weeks, to be correct. And I like being correct. But the most likely outcome is probably that Tampa Bay beats the Washington team of footballers, or the WTF. But I'm not putting it past the Bears getting past the Saints, which would,
no.
I mean, Bears-Packers third time. I still think the Packers beat that. People say that. It's like a truism that people just say it's hard to beat a team 3 times. It actually happens way more than you think. Mm-hmm. Like, teams beat teams for the third time quite a lot because it's the better team. If you sweep a team, you're generally the better team. You're generally still the better team in the third game. But it's one of those things that gets people afraid. The Packers have doubled up the Bears in both games, right? I mean, they're not the same competition. And this was, by the way, this was a well-coached game by Nagy. And they did exactly what they should do, which is keep Trubisky from throwing deep. Just have him throwing short. Keep him controlled. Keep the ball. Just possess it, have a huge time of possession advantage, try to run the ball when you can, throw it to your tight end, throw it to your wide receiver short, see if your playmakers can make plays after the ball, and just keep going, and then go for it on fourth down all the time. They did all the things they should have done, and they still got doubled up by this Packers team at home. And that's an, I mean, Soldier Field is an incredible home field advantage because it's the worst kept turf in football. It could be an interesting matchup.
Now that Pittsburgh's got their stuff together.
Yeah. because the Bears don't own that field. That's in charge of the city of Chicago's parks department, and they don't want to pay to mow that field. That's literally true. But anyhow.
So the odds of what teams were playing, we can't play the second or third seed team because it's mathematically impossible.
It'll be Washington if all the top seeds win, it'll be Washington. The most likely upset is Tampa Bay beats Washington, and we play Tampa as a wild card team. The Bears are out there as an interesting kind of wild card team. Trying to think who the other, because those are the ones I think are the most likely.
The Rams.
The Rams and Seahawks who just played, and that was because the Rams just played the Cardinals, and Seahawks just played the 49ers.
Yeah.
That's a winnable game. It really is, especially in a quiet, whatever corporate sponsor stadium that is now, as it's changed names recently, and I forget. But that's winnable too. But I think, I mean, if Chicago wins it, that's who we'll play. Regardless, because they're the lowest seed.
The lowest seed team that wins, we play, no matter what. So
I think that's the most likely
mathematically impossible for us to play the second or third because the fourth and the fifth has to win.
Yeah.
So
those are the only two we can't play, basically. But the rest of them are interesting. We'll talk more about them next week. We will give you a little talk here now for some additional football going into Wisconsin Badger football, which ends with a winning record by destroying the Demon Deacons. And just, they had them doubled up. They got a late touchdown for Wake Forest that made it 42-28, but it was 42-21 until a garbage time touchdown. I mean, just the Badgers got out in this one. They got up, they got down. I mean, like, Wake came out and did everything exactly the way they wanted to do it. They came out going up tempo, trying to throw the ball downfield, trying to force some plays down there. And then they got up 14-0. Badgers tied it by halftime, including a blocked punt that led to a touchdown to tie it before halftime. Badgers offense didn't look particularly excitable at that point, but the Badgers defense was keeping them in it after the first two plays, or first two drives, I'm sorry. I mean, and seriously, after that, it was 14 points in the second quarter, 14 points in the third, 14 points in the fourth. At one point, it was after the first 14 points by Wake, it was 42-7 from that point on. And then Wake scored a late touchdown to make it, you know, a little closer. But the Badger football just looked so much better than Wake. They did exactly what nobody in the ACC was able to do, which is rattle this young Sam Hartman. We talked about it last week, 10 touchdowns, one pick. And this guy came out there and threw four picks on four straight possessions in this game in the venerable Duke's Mayo Bowl, which is the grossest sounding name in all of bowl sports. Because
Hey, John, do I get to make my apology right now? Speaking of.
You go ahead.
Didn't see the bowl game because I forgot that it happened on Wednesday.
And it's middle of the day.
What bowl game happens midday on a Wednesday? So, yes, you're pretty much flying solo on this, taking any breakdown of this. I'm going to have to take your word for it.
I'm going to need your help on some Buck stuff later. But I mean, like, Christian Beale Smith looked like an okay kind of back. He had good patience. He doesn't have elite speed. He's not particularly powerful. He had very good patience in waiting for something to happen. The Badgers bottled him a little bit here and there, but I mean, Sam Hartman got to 318 yards, but that was throwing just like crazy in the back half of this game because they needed to, because they were just not in this game. Badger football just rolled on this team. Seriously, for a guy who had one pick through eight games to throw picks on four consecutive possessions, it was almost comical in that it just seemed like a cartoon show at some point that you were just waiting for, like you're watching and then suddenly the Badgers had the ball. And it was a different guy each time. Nelson almost got that touchdown. We had Sanborn on just an incredible play to be able to step down on the run read and then immediately react back because he's able to see the play and react appropriately. I mean, that's good coaching. That's good preparation on his part. It's good knowledge as to what was coming up next. And then he steps back and steps into the passing lane, seeing that the likely play is going to be the short crossing route, the quick in and the quick slant type play. Picks off that ball just out of nowhere. Badgers defense stepped up and did a great game here. They had a hard time getting a lot of anything going on this run game. The leading touchdown runner was Graham Mertz with two quarterback sneaks. He had 5 rushes for 12 yards. Some of the most yards. Garrett Groshek getting 3.2 a carry for 41 yards on 13 carries. Jalen Berger only getting 2.3. Didn't put him in a lot of positions to be successful. They just loaded up and hoped the Badgers couldn't throw. But, you know, they made a couple plays here and there. Graham Mertz, 11 for 17. Badgers are just trying to get his confidence back up and ready for next year so they can start trying to get something going. And a bowl win is a big way to try to step in and get yourself comfortable for what's going to happen next year. They're going to be bringing back a bunch of people. Graham Mertz should be feeling a little more comfortable. He's obviously got to have a little bit of training on how to hold on to a trophy. You'd think he'd be used to it by now, but he destroyed a trophy. and then replaced it with a Duke's Mayo thing, which Duke's Mayo does not exist at the Metro Mart. I'm going to tell you that. It's not here at Pick and Save or what used to be Cops and what I still continue to call Cops, but it's not because it was bought out.
What's Cops called now?
What's that? Oh, Cops got bought out. It's either a Metro Mart or a Pick and Save. So they got bought out, which is too bad, but still. Graham Mertz drops the trophy and destroys a crystal football looking trophy thing. But still, it's good confidence building for a program like this. You got a couple extra weeks of practice in. You ended the season on a high note. Jalen Berger coming back. We've got Graham Mertz obviously coming back. We have Stocky is actually leaving. Shamiri DK is coming back. We've just heard today that Kendrick Pryor will be coming back for his, extra season. So we'll have, Kendrick Pryor back with Jamari DK to help out Graham Mertz on that offense next year. We're going to lose a couple linemen, but we still have Berger coming back. Ferguson is coming back. I mean, huge.
Oh, you mean the grandson of Barry Alvarez?
Yeah. Is that true? I'd never heard that anywhere.
No,
that's shocking to me.
I wish they'd bring that up during the broadcast more often.
Yeah, that seems like really interesting news. They should bring up once.
Yeah, they should mention that
once, maybe twice, something like that. Just it should be heard at some point.
Once or twice possession.
Yeah.
Hey, so I was just going to say you were kind of alluding to it though, like, and there's something to be said too about it with the way the last game against Minnesota. That was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So there was actually kind of a week off there. But so it was the first 3 consecutive planned games in a row. And imagine that the Badgers played well after having the most, maybe the most disjointed season out of any team.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a couple of teams in the Pac-12 and a couple of the Big Ten teams that had some pretty, and Purdue had a pretty messed up run there for a little bit too.
Ohio State too.
I mean, yeah. So, I mean, it's just, oh my God, Ohio State. I have never cheered for Ohio State for a win. beating Chesty Dabo Sweeney. That was
Dabo Sweeney just makes you mad.
I hate Ohio State, but they are Big Ten, and I cheered for a Big Ten team that day.
Okay. And we're gonna get into more of our college football stuff at the end of this in our last call, but I wanna say the big news coming out recently, Jack Sanborn is coming back. Ferguson is coming back. Pryor is coming back. Eric Burrell will be leaving. Scott Nelson is coming back. I'm trying to think. There was one other one who was leaving Stocky. Mason Stocky, the fullback. One of 2 fullbacks who managed to score throughout the season. So, I mean, that's a rough loss, but, I mean, still, the number of players coming back for next year has been pretty high. We still have not heard on Danny Davis. And if Danny Davis, Kendrick Pryor, and Shamiri DK are all back next season, it could still be a very fun year. We're still going to have a very good defense. We've got very young defensive front there. We are going to lose Loudermilk. Loudermilk is almost – he's certainly gone because he's going to get to play somewhere next year for money and good money.
That's the difference. That's the difference, good money, too, because that's what I was just going to say about Danny Davis. We talked about this, and I've heard other people talk about this, too, is that Danny Davis comes out and goes to the pros right now. He could be a sixth, seventh-round pick or an undrafted free agent. Like, one more year in college to showcase his talents might actually help him, you know. And it was said that, you know, Ben Lieber was talking about that with Gophers players on the KFAM. Like, unless you're, like, a top 10 lock, you know, you play your bowl game because you can only help yourself. And in this last season, if you're going to come out to go to the pros, but you're only going to be a sixth or seventh round draft pick, like teams throw away sixth and seventh round draft picks in the NFL all the time. Like that's the first person to go. And if it's close between you and a third round draft pick, guess who's leaving? You are, because they spent third round. You have to be significantly better at the next level if you're a sixth or seventh round draft pick. Loudermilk gone. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, Fayon Hicks coming back. I don't know if Caesar Williams is planning on coming back. My guess is Caesar Williams is also going to be gone, just like Wild Goose, who left after he got injured this year.
God, if only Wild Goose's first name would have been Caesar. I really wish I would have named my child Caesar.
Caesar Wild Goose?
Caesar Wild Goose would be the best name ever in college history.
We are going to lose also the incredibly named Danny Vandenboom. I believe he's a senior this year, so we might lose him.
Vandenboom should have been a kicker or a punter, to be perfectly honest.
Could you
imagine at Camp Randall when everyone's shaking their keys before the kickoff?
Yeah, and then or hold the other shoe.
Vandenboom.
My son accidentally called him Danny Thunderboom. He's 14. It's not like a kid doing it. I was like, what? Vandenboom. I was like, all right. Anyhow, that's what we have for football this week. So we'll get used to not having Badger football for a little while, but we'll get back into some things here. Bucks had an interesting week. They had a rough start. We talked about it. They should have beaten the Celtics, did not. We were so mad at the embarrassing loss to the Knicks. But then they split a home and home with the Heat.
That's fine. Yeah.
Well, and the first one in Miami, the Bucks set the NBA record for most three-pointers in a game. I mean, yes. Yeah, okay.
29, right? Yeah.
29, I think you're right, yeah. That's fantastic. Then they beat the Bulls, which makes me happy because whatever they do, I still want to beat Chicago teams. And, I mean, unless they have nothing to do with our own record, but most of the Chicago teams are in Milwaukee's conference like this and the Cubs. And then they beat the Pistons. So they've got a home-and-home here with the Pistons. They'll play them again on January 6th, but they got a 10-point win over the Pistons. They destroyed the Bulls, just destroyed them, 26-96. I mean, that's fantastic. So you want to see them start to get on a little bit of a roll here. Milwaukee is thus far a half game behind Indiana. But, I mean, this team's talented enough, and especially when you look at the amount of like the value to a top five starting rotation in the NBA at this point. I mean, bench is nice, but you want to have the best five on the floor to start the game. And that's, I mean, Miami didn't have a ton of bench players when they were rolling through with that top three they had before.
Mm-hmm.
And then they find one or two other guys who are pretty nice for that four and five and not playing the four or five spot, but being the fourth and fifth guys to the group. Just having that ability to have a couple people here who are going to just find ways to be on the floor every now and then doing something. I mean, the Bucks were able to get a little bit off their bench here. They had three different players going to double digits against the Pistons tonight. Portis, Augustine, and Forbes. So, I mean, like, it's fantastic. I love seeing Augustine and Portis. Recent pickups that they just added to this team coming out there and being able to get, you know, significant minutes here and still being able to be very valuable to this team. It's nice to see some of those guys out there. I have been pretty impressed with Augustine so far. I think his cutting to the basket has been very good. I think his ability to kind of create out there has been very good. He had six assists as, you know, the point guard off the bench in this game. 9 assists for DiVincenzo. I don't know. What are your thoughts on DiVincenzo on this so far? How have you been feeling about him? I know you've loved the big ragu, and you've been very up on him so far coming out here as a being able to create and do some things out here as a. I guess we're essentially running two different shooting guards out there, but
right. Yeah, no,
nine assists is fantastic in 30 minutes.
No, it's. It, I mean, I don't get me wrong. I'll take any player that's going to play well for the Bucks, and because it's going to be. You were talking about it too, about like, you know, it's nice having a good bench, but you got to get those starters out there. That's the difference between a playoff team and a regular season team, in which that's what the Bucks have to crawl past here at this point. Is they're still a good regular season team, you know, but the Lakers prove, you know, and you know those, well, basically any team with LeBron on it proves that you got to have, you know, the good starters on it, and the Golden State too, you know, like you can have a okay record in the regular season as long as you got the starters, because starters what matter in the playoffs. But I'm all for DiVincenzo, and I how do you put it without really ripping on the guy, because I'm not trying to rip on the guy, but like, you know, everybody else goes after him for, you know, he's not dynamic, he's not a game changer. Well, maybe he just has to grow into his body. Some players have to do that too. You know, not everybody comes NBA ready when they're here. So, I mean, the guy's got a winning pedigree out of Villanova, you know.
Yep.
I hope that, you know, and you're right, you're running out two shooting guards. I don't know. Like, the more the merrier. I hope he gets better. I hope he puts pressure on Drew to play better, because, you know, that's good. I mean, let's have as many good players as we possibly can. You know, what's his name who played for Hero, who came from Wisconsin, showing up in the playoffs last year, you know, in the bubble. It's like, you know, if he wants to turn into that guy, great, sweet, awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I'll take it.
He wasn't able to shoot particularly well against the Pistons. I mean, he's just like 1 for 6 from three.
Well, that's still okay, because nobody else had to shoot except for Giannis.
Yeah, Giannis was fantastic. It was 2 for 6 from three, but he was 17 of 24 from the floor. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, 7 of 9 from the free throw line, which is fantastic, because his free throw shooting needed to improve, and he did not have a long off season, so that's good. Mm-hmm. He got 43 points, 19 for Middleton, 15 for Holiday, like I said, 10 for Portis, 11 for Augustine, 10 for Forbes. Yeah, it's nice to be able to see some of those things. I particularly like seeing Augustine. I'm becoming a fairly big fan of his at this point, for his ability to just kind of come in and get a spark and do a couple things to kind of keep the energy levels up on this team.
Right, absolutely. So yeah. It's like I said, get back to me after football season's over. I'll be more into the Bucks season at that point. So it's just a little shocking to see them 7th in the East, but it's early. You know, it's whatever.
This is true. So yeah, the other thing that we have here.
The only game that's super disappointing so far is that stinker against the Knicks. Like, that literally is, I mean, everything else is like, so they lost to the Heat, so they lost to the Celtics, whatever. That stinker against the Knicks was a little bit off-putting, but since then it's been business as usual. They lost to the Heat and they lost to the Celtics. Those are two of the better teams in the East. It happens. So
yeah. So we're going to start moving this into our main event at this point. Start talking about Badger basketball. Badger basketball still ranked 8th, even though they had kind of a setback this week and a little bit of an unexpected loss in with Maryland. They played it at home. And here's the thing is, like, Maryland is the unranked team between Michigan State and Minnesota, two ranked Big Ten opponents. Maryland had a big 7-footer. He's like 7'2". A little gangly in his body, but he affected a lot of shots. And this is the thing, I've said this repeatedly on this program, with Potter and Reavers down there, the Badgers should be stronger in the post than what they've been, especially with their big guys. Their point guards play great in the post, and you know they do well with Potter and Reavers in the post for the most part, but they have not been physical and they have not been dominant. When you had Kaminsky and Decker down there, they just owned whoever was going to guard them. It didn't matter. They could go inside and outside, but their post game was as good as anybody's. They just did not play particularly strong post here against Maryland. They had trouble getting it inside. Their shooting was slow to start off with, and it never caught back up completely. They got themselves back to tied. They had a lead a couple times throughout that game. But yeah, they never found a way to just get ahead and stay ahead. With Minnesota, they got ahead and they just ran with it. They never looked back. They were able to stay with this game and just run the floor on Minnesota. And just it seemed like Potter and Reavers took it more personally in this game, and they went right at them. Did a lot of things that I have been begging them to do at this point. So yeah, they get the loss. I mean, their losses this year are Marquette and Maryland. At Marquette, the weird one is Maryland at home. But yeah, they destroyed Louisville. They beat Michigan State by 9. They beat Minnesota by 12. So yeah, next one they got coming up is going to be Penn State on the 3rd. That game should have happened. That game was postponed due to some issues there. So next game is the 7th, with IU, Indiana. And it won't make up for the terrible showing by the football team, but it would be nice to beat IU in basketball and let them know what it feels like, because they're not a football team, and get them back where it actually hurts. But yeah, they're going to have some tough ranked games coming up ahead. They're going to have number 10 Michigan, number 15 Rutgers. And they'll have a little stretch here with Ohio State Northwestern, who is not currently ranked but has been this year. A chance to go get Maryland at College Park, and then a chance for Penn State again to make up for the postponed game here. So tough games coming up. The Big Ten is just rough all the way through. The one thing for the Badgers is they will avoid Iowa until February 18th, and they will end the season with Iowa. Iowa has Garza's just... He's the best player in the Big Ten right now, and he's going to be up there for Player of the Year in college basketball this year. That's going to be the hardest one this year. Badgers have a real chance to kind of start putting their own mark on this season by trying to get this next 2-week stretch here, getting all the way through Rutgers. That's going to be a rough stretch, and they'll have a little bit of a reprieve. But I mean, they're still going to play Illinois and Michigan again, so. We'll see. Demetric Trice has looked better this year than he did even last year. If Potter and Reavers can continue to stay physical, this could be just a great, great team, and it could be a lot of fun to watch going forward here. Either way, this team's going to be in the tournament. They're going to be a real force to contend with through the Big Ten tournament and then into the NCAA. It's going to be interesting. Fun point they brought up today, apparently the entire NCAA tournament is going to be played in Indiana. They're going to be using all the different gyms in Indiana, Purdue, Indiana, Indiana State, Ball State in Muncie, Indiana. Go Cardinals. They're going to be using those different courts to be playing a lot of these games going through here. So that'll be interesting going forward as to how the NCAA tournament will be. It'll be almost a bubble, but not exactly.
That was your fifth reference to Indiana State in this podcast. By the way.
How great is that? Go Sycamores!
Oh my God,
how many teams by the named way, after trees?
So who knew that the Big Ten would be the powerhouse basketball conference at any point? It, like in our lives, like growing up, it was always the Big East in the ACC. Like yeah. It's they're going to have 7 teams in the tournament this year.
Yeah. Easily.
Minimum.
They might have 7 more. Yeah. I mean, like they had 9 ranked teams a week ago.
Right.
I mean, it's pretty likely even the unranked teams like Maryland and Northwestern are going to have a good shot at this game getting into the tournament this year. It could be very interesting to see how good this Big Ten can be. They won the ACC Big Ten ACC Challenge this year, which they won again in the football because, ACC went 0-6. In bowl games too, but yeah. So, looking good for Badger basketball. It's going to be interesting to see that. It's been a fantastic week for Wisconsin sports, but we're going to wrap up the last several things that we have to talk about here and a couple very fun rants that Aaron and I have been holding up here. We're going to put those into the thing that we lovingly call our last call.
Time to look around and get your bearings. It's time for the last call.
All right, Aaron, last call time. The first thing we wanted to rant on is this stupid college football playoff. Man, just
which part about it?
The ACC had no business being in it at all. Nope. The ACC is a garbage conference, which has been allowing Clemson.
They gave them two spots, and they lost both of them.
I mean, like this, and not only did they lose, they both got blown out. And Cincinnati, which, by the way, they lost. They lost a very close one to Georgia in a late field goal. A couple of things could have gone one way or the other. Cincinnati should at least been in the playoff to give a chance to compete against some of these teams, because you know what?
They could have gotten blown out as bad as Notre Dame did.
Yeah. And you know what? Do you know what Cincinnati did that Notre Dame didn't do? They won a conference championship. Notre Dame wasn't even the best team in the ACC, and they let them in. Why? Because their big win was beating Clemson when Clemson's Heisman Trophy candidate was out. They had a true freshman starting, and they put him in.
John, in fairness, Notre Dame hasn't won a conference championship in over half a century.
Yeah, I know, but still, this time they played in a conference championship. They were in a conference this year and allowed to play for a conference championship, and they didn't win it. They didn't win it. And
I know. Sorry.
Just the ACC hit. No, you're exactly right, but still, that's a fun point. I appreciate you bringing that up. But, man, just Notre Dame didn't belong in it. Clemson has been able to walk through one of the weakest conferences among the quote-unquote Power Five. The ACC is not good at football, and they showed it again this year. None of their teams were particularly good. Notre Dame, Clemson, Wake, they got blown out. NC State, I'm trying to think who else was in the Bulls. So it was NC State, UNC, who was ranked top 15. They got beat up pretty badly. I guess they were not favored to win the game. They were playing like the fifth-ranked A&M. But still, it's like, don't put two teams from the same conference in. It's stupid. If you didn't win your conference, you're not the best team in the country. You're not the best team in your conference. It's dumb. No. It's super dumb. So
the whole thing is that they have to let this is a year that they were like, hey, we're going to let another conference get two people in. So the next time we do it with the SEC, we can go, hey, we don't just do it for the SEC.
Yeah.
We did it for the ACC last year.
Yeah.
So this year we're going to let Auburn and Alabama in. So just get over it yourselves, because we let, other conferences get two people in.
And here's
Meantime, the Pac-12 is sitting out there going, like, what are we, chopped liver at this point?
They are.
I know, but still at the same time, it's like the Pac-10, but the Pac-12 has to be, it's one of the Power Five conferences. I mean,
yeah.
What are we just going to exclude them? And how did the ACC, except for the fact of the proximity to the SEC, how on earth is the ACC being treated better than the Pac-12?
Here's what I'll say.
College football than the ACC ever has. There's four conferences that have done more for college football than anybody else. It's the Big Ten, the Big 12, the SEC, and the Pac-12. At what point has the ACC ever done anything?
No, there's never been much. Texas, they're a basketball conference.
Texas is in the Big 12. Come on. So long.
I would say SEC, Pac-12, Big Ten, most. I mean, Texas, but they weren't always Big 12. They were a Southwest Conference.
Oklahoma State.
Yeah, then when they were Big Eight. Yeah, and Nebraska saying, like, and the Big Eight. But yeah, still, here's the biggest thing that I will say is, like, if the South doesn't have one or two teams in it, they won't watch, because they're not actually college football fans. They are local fans.
Mm-hmm.
And they know. They know that they will get every television in the North, in the Midwest. We'll still be watching football because we love football. And I watched Notre Dame play. And I mean, even when they're in the wrong conference and they should be in the Big Ten. And I watched Alabama just roll on them, even though I knew they would. I watched Clemson get beat by Ohio State, which, by the way, I was one of 14% of the experts on Tally site who was picking Ohio State to win and cover and win this game head up. I was exactly right again. But yeah, I mean, just I don't know. It's a terrible, terrible
people
thing.
In the upper Midwest who make a decent amount of money and take care of themselves and can afford, you know, maybe some cable packages to watch some other football games and appreciate an actual sporting event as opposed to the deep South where, you know, hey, this hanger out on the back of the TV. What do you mean it doesn't get digital TV stations anymore? What do you mean I got to buy a package to watch my college football team? I guess I'm just going to listen to it on the radio then.
Which is fun. I want to put in one thing before you to our big thing here. Team USA just won a 4-3 game against Team Finland in the World Juniors, which, by the way, again, two Badgers on Team USA, one Badger on Team Canada, which, by the way, just beat Russia 5-0. Gold medal game coming up, Team USA versus Team Canada.
I've been watching you watch that throughout this podcast.
It's fantastic.
How on earth you can do that, and I can't. I have to lock myself in a room and just pay attention to you because if there was a sporting event on in the background, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it.
I'm just going back and forth. You can see me as I'm like,
I can see you look down when I'm talking, go pump, fist pump, or go, oh, and I'm like,
it's true.
I can't do that. I have to pay attention to you or I'm gone. You know.
Yeah. Well, I'm still talking while I watch it, so I try to multitask. And if any of you have ever read the Kingkiller Chronicles, which are still, you know, the third book hasn't been written, divide my brain into two spots, two different entities, and use it that way. You should read that book, everybody. Series of books. They're fantastic. Patrick Rothfuss. He's a Wisconsin writer, by the way. He teaches at UWSP, I believe. Really fun books. But interesting. But anyhow, the other thing that Aaron and I wanted to talk about, and Aaron's going to need time for this, and we're using our time.
Bill Hicks, looks like we got ourselves a reader.
Yeah. the New York Giants are the saltiest 6-10 team ever. For a 6-10 team to need a 4-win team to like step up and give them something is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Did you hear Collinsworth last night? I used to like Collinsworth.
I've never been a big fan of his. Collinsworth becomes too much of a prisoner of the narrative. And he starts going into the, like, there was a specific Packer game where he's like, well, Aaron Rodgers, nobody's open. And they're just, you know, like, he's doing so great. And, like, there was a period of time where he would just hold the ball too long, waiting for great open passes. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, well, nobody gets open. And then they would show the replay. He's like, well, you just watch it here. He's not, well, actually, he looks really open. Well, he actually had a step on it. Yeah, I don't really know what he was looking at. I was like, yeah, because you're in the narrative and you're not watching film or talking to people or looking at games.
I mean, the glass house started shattering about 3 weeks ago when Chris Collinsworth actually said this during his broadcast. Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in the NFL on pre-snap reads and drawing the other team offsides. And Al goes, about 5 seconds later, he goes, Packers are on the phone. They want to have a talk with you.
Exactly. Nobody.
and last night, I mean, it's almost like a joke at this point. Like, he's like, well, the Philadelphia Eagles are going to have to be apologizing to the Giants tomorrow. And it's
no.
Like, and today I was listening to Patrick, and Dan Patrick was the same way. He's like, these Giants fans that are so salty about the Eagles not helping, he's like, shut up. He's like, yeah, he's like, you know, maybe you question putting that game on Sunday Night Football. That should be the biggest question. Like, why on earth was that the Sunday Night Football game? Hell, the Packers-Bears game would have been a better one. Seattle 49ers would have been a better one. You had 9 different options. The Bills just get killed. I mean, why can't we get a Bills game on primetime? You know, the Bills are a really good team. In the meantime, we've got Blake Martinez complaining on Twitter that the Eagles aren't helping them out. You're 6-10. And it's like, and that's what I was responding to everybody on Twitter last night. It's like, maybe win more than 6 games. Like, if you would have won one more game, this wouldn't be an issue. Like, you're literally being salty about your 6-10 team didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
And now Doug Peterson and the Philadelphia Eagles, who owe the Giants nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. decides to roll out a third string quarterback in the fourth quarter. And now Peter King's coming on Dan Patrick this morning going, this is in the flies in the face of the integrity of the NFL. There is a playoff game, playoff berth on the line. Doug Peterson has to put the best team out there to win.
No.
It's like, what about the Jets? Everyone got mad that the Jets were winning. Everyone's applauding the Jags for tanking a season, canning their coach, and now winning the tank for Trevor.
Well,
there's Vikings fans that are irate today because they beat the Lions yesterday. And because of it, now they have the 14th pick instead of the 9th pick. Because you can't trade up from a 14th pick to the top five, but a 9th to the top five, you can. So all these other teams can tank, but because the New York Giants, the illustrious New York Giants, who haven't done a damn thing in 5 years.
5 years.
Except for destroy Saquon Barkley's career.
It's early. He's got time. No, here's what I'll say. What's getting lost in all of this is that at the time they pulled Hurts, who, by the way, I would have loved to have drafted Hurts over Love. Love hurts. No, love scars.
Yeah, right.
but Hurts was 7 of 20 for 72 yards and a pick, no touchdowns. That's a 25.4 rating. You're like, man, can't believe they pulled him. They're clearly tanking. Hurts was playing terribly. He was playing terribly. The idea, you're like, man, if they pulled their terrible quarterback, they must be tanking. Like, they started him. They started him. Like, what are you talking about? They were already losing when he was on the field. The idea that they were tanking just to get the Giants or because they didn't care. Like, no, then they just started the guy from the beginning. The guy they started wasn't doing well. They're getting ready for next year.
I honestly think a lot of people are mad because of the Schadenfreude. They wanted to see the NFC East have a 6-10 team in the playoffs.
The idea, the whole thing about like, oh, but they owe it to the team. You're like, you didn't care that any of the, you know, like every time we had a team play the Jaguars, nobody was like, man, they should send an extra player to the Jaguars to make it a better game or something. Like, it's dumb. Just the Jaguars, when they draft terribly this next year, you won't care that they're drafting terribly. When they traded away Ngakwe, nobody's like, well, that ruins the competitive balance. Now the Colts are going to win a game they shouldn't have won. It's stupid. Stupid.
Well, and the whole narrative that, well, Brady's lost twice in the playoffs to the Giants.
Okay.
It's like, that was Tom Coughlin's teams with Eli Manning. And that was a whole different regime. What the Giants have going right now and that hot mess that wears the blue and white, that's not Tom Coughlin's. Well,
last time the Giants won the division, they beat the Patriots in a Super Bowl. I mean, like, that's the thing.
Right.
No, you don't win 6 games and then complain that somebody else didn't help you enough.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't do enough yourself. So I'm tired of it.
You played yourself.
You played yourself. Congratulations. You played yourself.
Yeah, no, and especially Blake Martinez out of all the brand new Giants middle linebacker who.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah, exactly. That's we really have gone over because there have been so many great Wisconsin stories this week. We won't have any more Wisconsin football to talk about for a while, other than little notes and stuff that we'll put in the last call. But it's been a fantastic season. Congratulations, Badgers. We'll start moving Badger basketball up with the Bucks and Packers here in the next couple weeks. So, yeah, thank you again for joining us. It's been a wonderful show. It's been a great time hanging out with one of the best people I know, my buddy Aaron Flottam here.
Aww.
Another wonderful week. Just putting together something that we love doing, and we love having you along with us for the ride. So thank you for joining us for another week. Remember, you can follow the podcast at ScottyJohnnyPod on Twitter. You can follow me at NotSoHumbleHost, and you can follow Aaron at CheddarTalk. If you go back through the list of the many different people we've had on the show, you can follow them as well, the multiple friends of the podcast we've had. Looking forward to another wonderful year with everybody. Congratulations on making it to 2021. Things are looking up here in Wisconsin, at least sports-wise. So we'll be back next week, and we'll be very happy to have you with us again at that point. And remember, whether you are on the town or on the go, or safe at home on the couch, It is always on Wisconsin.
This has been the Scotty Johnny Podcast. Remember to find the boys on Twitter at ScottyJohnny1 or online at ScottyJohnny.com. Thanks for listening, and on Wisconsin.